Chapter 20, The Deadline That Was Reached. The secretary passed through the door held open by a soldier. On his purpling, swollen lips, there was a brief, cold smile. He bowed to the colonel and remained completely unaware, to all appearances, of the presence of Arvidin. "Sir," said the colonel to the earthman, "I have communicated to the High Minister the details of your presence here and the manner in which it came about. Your detention here is, of course, entirely unorthodox, and it is my purpose to set you free as soon as I can. However, I have here a gentleman who, as you probably know, has lodged against you a very serious accusation, one which, under the circumstances, we must investigate." "I understand, Colonel," said the secretary calmly. "However, as I have already explained to you, this man has been on Earth, I believe, only a matter of 2 months or so, so that his knowledge of our internal politics is non-existent. This is a flimsy basis indeed for any accusation." Arvidin retorted in anger, "I am an archaeologist by profession, and one who has specialized of late on Earth and its customs. My knowledge of its politics is far from non-existent, and in any case, I am not the only one who makes the accusation." The secretary did not look at the archaeologist, either now or later. He spoke exclusively to the colonel. He said, "One of our local scientists is involved in this, one who, approaching the end of his normal 60 years, is suffering from delusions of persecution. Then, in addition, there is another man, one of unknown antecedents and a history of idiocy. All three could not raise a respectable accusation among them." Arvidin jumped to his feet. "I demand to be heard. Sit down," said the colonel coldly and unsympathetically. "You have refused to discuss the matter with me. Let the refusal stand. Bring in the man with the flag of truce." It was another member of the Society of Ancients. Scarcely a flicker of the eyelid betrayed any emotion on his part at the sight of the secretary. The colonel rose from his chair and said, "Do you speak for the men outside?"
"I do, sir."
"I assume, then, that this riotous and illegal assembly is based upon a demand for the return of your fellow countrymen here?"
"Yes, sir."
"He must be immediately freed."
"Indeed."
"Nevertheless, the interest of law and order, and the respect due His Imperial Majesty's representatives on this world, require that the matter cannot possibly be discussed while men are gathered in armed rebellion against us. You must have your men disperse." The secretary spoke up pleasantly. "The colonel is perfectly correct, Brother Corey. Please calm the situation. I am perfectly safe here, and there is no danger for anybody. Do you understand? For anybody. It is my word as an ancient." "Very well, brother. I am thankful you are safe." He was ushered out. The colonel said curtly, "We will see that you leave here safely as soon as matters in the city have returned to normal. Thank you for your cooperation in this matter just concluded." Arvidin was again on his feet.
"I forbid it. You will let loose this would-be murderer of the human race while forbidding me an interview with the procurator when that would be simply in accord with my rights as a galactic citizen?"
Then, in a paroxysm of frustration, "Will you show more consideration to an earthman dog than you will to me?" The secretary's voice sounded over that last near incoherent rage.
"Colonel, I will gladly remain until such time as my case is heard by the procurator, if that is what this man wants. An accusation of treason is serious, and the suspicion of it, however far-fetched, may be sufficient to ruin my usefulness to my people. I would really appreciate the opportunity to prove to the procurator that none is more loyal to the Empire than myself." The colonel said stiffly, "I admire your feeling, sir, and freely admit that were I in your place, my attitude would be quite different. You are a credit to your race, sir. I will attempt contact with the procurator." Arvidin said nothing more until led back to his cell. He avoided the glance of the others. For a long time, he sat motionless with a knuckle pinched between gnawing teeth. Until Schecht said, "Well?" Arvidin shook his head. "I just about ruined everything. What did you do? Lost my temper? Offended the colonel? Got nowhere? I'm no diplomat, Shep. He felt riven with a sudden urge for self-defense. What could I do? He cried. Balkis had already been to the colonel so that I couldn't trust him. What if he'd been offered his life? What if he's been in on the plot all along? I know it's a wild thought, but I couldn't take the chance. It was too suspicious. I wanted to see Ennius himself. The physicist was on his feet, withered hands clasped behind his back. Well then, is Ennius coming? I suppose so. But it is only at Balkis' own request. And that I don't understand. Balkis' own request? Then Schwartz must be right. Yes? What has Schwartz been saying? The plump Earthman was sitting on his cot. He shrugged his shoulders when the eyes turned to him and spread out his hands in a helpless gesture. I caught the secretary's mind touch when they took him past our room just now. He's definitely had a long talk with this officer you talked to. I know. But there's no treason in that officer's mind. Well, miserably, then I guessed wrong. I'll eat worms when Ennius comes. What about Balkis? There's no worry or fear in his mind, only hate. And now it's mostly hate for us, for capturing him, for dragging him here. We've wounded his vanity horribly, and he intends to square it with us. I saw little daydream pictures in his mind of himself, single-handed, preventing the entire galaxy from doing anything to stop him, even while we, with our knowledge, work against him. He's giving us the odds, the trumps, and then he'll smash us anyway and triumph over us. You mean that he will risk his plans, his dreams of empire, just to vent a little spite at us? That's mad. I know, said Schwartz with finality. He is mad. And he thinks he'll succeed? That's right. Then we must have you, Schwartz. We'll need your mind. Listen to me. But Schecht was shaking his head. No, Overden, we couldn't work that. I woke Schwartz when you left and we discussed the matter. His mental powers, which he can describe only dimly, are obviously not under perfect control. He can stun a man or paralyze him or even kill him. Better than that, he can control the larger voluntary muscles, even against the subject's will, but no more than that. In the case of the secretary, he couldn't make the man talk, the small muscles about the vocal cords being beyond him. He couldn't coordinate motion well enough to have the secretary drive a car. He even balanced him while walking only with difficulty. Obviously, then, we couldn't control Ennius, for instance, to the point of having him issue an order or write one. I've thought of that, you see. Schecht shook his head as his voice trailed away. Overden felt the desolation of futility descend upon him. Then, with a sudden pang of anxiety, where's Pola? She's sleeping in the alcove. He would have longed to wake her. Longed. Oh, longed a lot of things. Arvidin looked at his watch. It was almost midnight, and there were only 30 hours left. He slept for a while after that, then woke for a while as it grew light again. No one approached, and a man's very soul grew haggard and pale. Arvidin looked at his watch. It was almost midnight, and there were only 6 hours left. He looked about him now in a dazed and hopeless way. They were all here now, even the procurator at last. Pola was next to him, her warm little fingers on his wrist, and that look of fear and exhaustion on her face that more than anything else infuriated him against all the galaxy. Maybe they all deserved to die, the stupid, stupid, stupid. He scarcely saw Schecht and Schwartz. They sat on his left. And there was Balkis, the damnable Balkis, with his lips still swollen, one cheek green so that it must hurt like the devil to talk. And Overden's own lips stretched into a furious, aching smile at the thought, and his fists clenched and writhed. His own bandaged cheek ached less at the thought. Facing all of them was Ennius. Frowning, uncertain, almost ridiculous, dressed as he was in those heavy, shapeless, lead-impregnated clothes. And he was stupid, too. Arvidin felt a thrill of hatred shoot through him at the thought of these galactic trimmers who wanted only peace and ease. Where were the conquerors of 3 centuries back? Where? 6 hours left. Ennius had received the call from the Shikar garrison some 18 hours before, and he had streaked half around the planet at the summons. The motives that led him to that were obscure, but nonetheless forceful. Essentially, he told himself, there was nothing to the matter but a regrettable kidnapping of one of those green-robed curiosities of superstitious, hag-ridden Earth. That and these wild and undocumented accusations. Nothing, certainly, that the colonel on the spot could not have handled. And yet, there was Schecht. Schecht was in this. And not as the accused, but as an accuser. It was confusing. He sat now facing them, thinking, quite conscious that his decision in this case might hasten the rebellion, perhaps weaken his own position at court, ruin his chances at advancement. As for Arvidin's long speech just now about virus strains and unbridled epidemics, how seriously could he take it? After all, if he took action on the basis of it, how credible would the matter sound to his superiors? And yet Arvidin was an archaeologist of note. So he postponed the matter in his mind by saying to the secretary, "Surely you have something to say in this matter?" "Surprisingly little," said the secretary with easy confidence. "I would like to ask what evidence exists for supporting the accusation." "Your Excellency," said Arvidin with snapping patience, "I have already told you that the man admitted it in every detail at the time of our imprisonment day before yesterday." "Perhaps," said the secretary, "you choose to credit that, Your Excellency, but it is simply an additional unsupported statement. Actually, the only facts to which outsiders can bear witness to are that I was the one violently taken prisoner, not they, that it was my life that was in peril, not theirs. Now, I would like my accuser to explain how he could find all this out in the 9 weeks that he has been on the planet, when you, the procurator, in years of service here, have found nothing to my disadvantage." "There is reason in what the brother says," admitted Ennius heavily. "How do you know?" Arvidin replied stiffly, "Prior to the accused's confession, I was informed of the conspiracy by Dr. Schecht." "Is that so, Dr. Schecht?" The procurator's glance shifted to the physicist. "That is so, Your Excellency." "And how did you find out?" Schecht said, "Dr. Arvidin was admirably thorough and accurate in his description of the use to which the synapsifier was put, and in his remarks concerning the dying statements of the bacteriologist F. Smithko. This Smithko was a member of the conspiracy. His remarks were recorded, and the recording is available." "But, Dr. Schecht, the dying statements of a man known to be in delirium, if what Dr. Arvidin said is true, cannot be of very great weight. You have nothing else?" Arvidin interrupted by striking his fist on the arm of his chair and roaring, "Is this a law court? Has someone been guilty of violating a traffic ordinance? We have no time to weigh evidence on an analytical balance or measure it with micrometers. I tell you we have till 6 in the morning, 5.5 hours, in other words, to wipe out this enormous threat. You knew Dr. Schecht previous to this time, Your Excellency. Have you known him to be a liar?" The secretary interposed instantly. "No one accused Dr. Schecht of deliberately lying, Your Excellency. It is only that the good doctor is aging and has of late been greatly concerned over his approaching 60th birthday. I am afraid that a combination of age and fear have induced slight paranoiac tendencies common enough here on Earth. Look at him. Does he seem to you quite normal?" He did not, of course. He was drawn and tense, shattered by what had passed and what was to come. Yet Schecht forced his voice into normal tones, even into calmness. He said, "I might say that for the last 2 months I have been under the continual watch of the ancients, that my letters have been opened and my answers censored. But it is obvious that all such complaints would be attributed to the paranoia spoken of. However, I have here Joseph Schwartz, the man who volunteered as a subject for the synapsifier one day when you were visiting me at the Institute." "I remember," There was a feeble gratitude in Ennius's mind that the subject had, for the moment, veered.
Is that the man?
Yes. He looks none the worse for the experience.
He is far the better.
The exposure to the synapsifier was uncommonly successful, since he had a photographic memory to begin with, a fact I did not know at the time. At any rate, he now has a mind which is sensitive to the thoughts of others. Ennius leaned far forward in his chair and cried in shocked amazement,
What? Are you telling me he reads minds?
That can be demonstrated, Your Excellency. But I think the brother will confirm the statement. The secretary darted a quick look of hatred at Schwartz, boiling in its intensity and lightning-like in its passage across his face. He said with but the most imperceptible quiver in his voice, It is quite true, Your Excellency. This man they have here has certain hypnotic faculties, though whether that is due to the synapsifier or not, I don't know. I might add that this man's subjection to the synapsifier was not recorded, a matter which you will agree is highly suspicious.
It was not recorded, said Schecht quietly, in accordance with my standing orders from the High Minister.
But the secretary merely shrugged his shoulders at that. Ennius said peremptorily, Let us get on with the matter and avoid this petty bickering. What about this Schwartz? What have his mind-reading powers or hypnotic talents or whatever they are to do with the case?
Schecht intends to say, put in the secretary, that Schwartz can read my mind.
Is that it?
Well,
and what is he thinking? Asked the procurator, speaking to Schwartz for the first time.
He's thinking, said Schwartz, that we have no way of convincing you of the truth of our side of what you call the case.
Quite true, scoffed the secretary, though that deduction scarcely calls for much mental power.
And also, Schwartz went on, that you are a poor fool, afraid to act, desiring only peace, hoping by your justice and impartiality to win over the men of Earth, and all the more a fool for so hoping.
The secretary reddened. I deny all that. It is an obvious attempt to prejudice you, Your Excellency.
But Ennius said, I am not so easily prejudiced.
And then to Schwartz,
And what am I thinking?
Schwartz replied, That even if I could see clearly within a man's skull, I need not necessarily tell the truth about what I see.
The procurator's eyebrows lifted in surprise.
You are correct.
Quite correct.
Do you maintain the truth of the claims put forward by Doctors Arvidin and Schecht?
Every word of it.
So? Yet, unless a second such as you can be found, one who is not involved in the matter, your evidence would not be valid in law, even if we could obtain general belief in you as a telepath.
But it is not a question of the law, cried Arvidin, but of the safety of the galaxy.
Your Excellency, the secretary rose in his seat, I have a request to make. I would like to have this Joseph Schwartz removed from the room.
Why so?
This man, in addition to reading minds, has certain powers of mental force. I was captured by means of a paralysis induced by this Schwartz. It is my fear that he may attempt something of the sort now against me, or even against you, Your Excellency, that forces me to the request.
Arvidin rose to his feet, but the secretary overshadowed him to say, No hearing can be fair if a man is present who might subtly influence the mind of the judge by means of admitted mental gifts.
Ennius made his decision quickly. An orderly entered, and Joseph Schwartz, offering no resistance nor showing the slightest sign of perturbation on his moonlike face, was led away. To Arvidin, it was the final blow. As for the secretary, he rose now, and for the moment stood there, a squat, grim figure in green, strong in his self-confidence. He began in serious, formal style. Your Excellency, all of Dr. Arvidin's beliefs and statements rest upon the testimony of Dr. Schecht. In turn, Dr. Schecht's beliefs rest upon the dying delirium of one man. And all this, Your Excellency, all this, somehow never reached the surface until after Joseph Schwartz was submitted to the synapsifier. Who, then, is Joseph Schwartz? Until Joseph Schwartz appeared on the scene, Dr. Schecht was a normal, untroubled man. You yourself, Your Excellency, spent an afternoon with him the day Schwartz was brought in for treatment. Was he abnormal then? Did he inform you of treason against the Empire? Of certain babblings on the part of a dying biochemist? Did he seem even troubled or suspicious? He says now that he was instructed by the High Minister to falsify the results of the synapsifier tests, not to record the names of those treated. Did he tell you that then? Or only now, after that day on which Schwartz appeared? Again, who is Joseph Schwartz? He spoke no known language at the time he was brought in, so much we found out for ourselves later, when we first began to suspect the stability of Dr. Schecht's reason. He was brought in by a farmer who knew nothing of his identity, or indeed any facts about him at all, nor have any since been discovered. Yet this man has strange mental powers. He can stun at 100 yards by thought alone, kill at closer range. I myself have been paralyzed by him, my arms and legs were manipulated by him, my mind might have been manipulated by him if he had wished. I believe, certainly, that Schwartz did manipulate the minds of these others. They say I captured them, that I threatened them with death, that I confessed to treason and to aspiring to empire. Yet, ask of them one question, Your Excellency. Have they not been thoroughly exposed to the influence of Schwartz, that is, of a man capable of controlling their minds? Is not, perhaps, Schwartz a traitor? If not, who is Schwartz? The secretary seated himself, calm, almost genial. Arvidin felt as though his brain had mounted a cyclotron and was spinning outward now in faster revolutions. What answer could one make? That Schwartz was from the past? What evidence was there for that? That the man spoke a genuinely primitive speech? But only he himself, Arvidin, could testify to that. And he, Arvidin, might well have a manipulated mind. After all, how could he tell his mind had not been manipulated? Who was Schwartz? What had so convinced him of this great plan of galactic conquest? He thought again. From where came his conviction of the truth of the conspiracy? He was an archaeologist, given to doubting. But now, had it been one man's word, one girl's kiss, or Joseph Schwartz? He couldn't think. He couldn't think. Well, Ennius sounded impatient. Have you anything to say, Dr. Schecht? Or you, Dr. Arvidin? But Pola's voice suddenly pierced the silence. Why do you ask them? Can't you see that it's all a lie? Don't you see that he's tying us all up with his false tongue? Oh, we're all going to die, and I don't care anymore. But we could stop it. We could stop it. And instead we just sit here and talk. She burst into wild sobs. The secretary said, "So we are reduced to the screams of a hysterical girl. Your Excellency, I have this proposition. My accusers say that all this, the alleged virus and whatever else they have in mind, is scheduled for a definite time, 6 in the morning, I believe. I offer to remain in your custody for a week. If what they say is true, word of an epidemic in the galaxy ought to reach Earth within a few days. If such occurs, Imperial forces will still control Earth. Earth is a fine exchange indeed for a galaxy of humans," mumbled the white-faced Schecht. "I value my own life and that of my people. We are hostages for our innocence, and I am prepared at this instant to inform the Society of Ancients that I will remain here for a week of my own free will and prevent any disturbances that might otherwise occur." He folded his arms. Ennius looked up, his face troubled. "I find no fault in this man." Arvidin could stand it no more. With a quiet and deadly ferocity, he arose and strode quickly toward the procurator. What he meditated was never known. Afterward, he himself could not remember. At any rate, it made no difference. Aeneas had a neuronic whip and used it. For the third time since landing on Earth, everything about Alverdon flamed up into pain, spun about, and vanished. In the hours during which Alverdon was unconscious, the 6 o'clock deadline was reached.